Welcome to the Venture Capital Podcast. Today we are here with the founders of Phi Health. We have Kirk Wiemet and Scott Paul.
Hello, John.
Experts in AI, blockchain, and health tech.
I'm not the expert. I just know a little about everything.
But you guys are both experts in multiple fields.
Well, we know how to be experts because we've befriended a lot of experts. And so being an expert is just having access to experts, in my opinion.
Okay, let's do introductions real fast. We'll start with Kirk. So Kirk and I went to BYU together. We met through the web startup group. Multiple times, John Richards says, hey, you should join this company called QR Code City or scan.me. And I looked at him like, crazy. No, thank you.
Later. Why?
Why?
Yeah.
I didn't see a future in QR codes. That was why.
Okay.
The whole reason I hung out with John Richards is I wanted to find the next Omniture, like the next company that was going to go public before I went public. And as I look back on my list, that was one of those companies at the time that I missed. So you guys later sold to Snapchat for about $55 million. Mm-hmm. It got leaked and published to TechCrunch. So that was always a fun day.
Yeah, I remember that. It was the CEO of Sony was on the board of Snap. And Evan, the CEO of Snap, was incredibly secretive. So he actually wanted our acquisition to be completely private. In fact, he said, you can't even tell your parents. Like,
I was an advisor and you guys couldn't tell me.
Yeah.
You all moved to LA.
Yeah. So I told my dad, I'm like, hey, we're going to move to Los Angeles. And he's like, why? And I'm like, I can't tell you why, which tells you a lot. And but we weren't to reveal which company had acquired us. We weren't to reveal any of that. And I think Evan had really taken a page out of Apple's book of like, hey, let's not ship something or show something or let anyone know what we're doing until it's ready. And I remember the day that the hack happened, the North Koreans had gotten access not to Snapchat's email, but to the Sony's email. And they went through and I think they released to the press a full Outlook email dump of the CEO's email. And it was article after article after article that the press was farming out of that dump of all of the emails. So it was every deal, every valuation, every price, like, and they were just like feeding on it. And me and Garrett, my co-founder and partner, we had Ben Turley as well as one of our co-founders in the company. But me and Garrett were sitting in the Snapchat office looking at this being posted and being like, this is crazy that all of this is coming out now. And then our phones were blowing up because people were messaging because they had read the news that we'd been acquired. And I called my dad and was able to tell him. But the next morning, Evan called an all hands and I gathered there was only 60 people in the company at the time. So all of us could fit into a lunchroom. And he called a meeting and he was completely devastated that every single thing that he'd been working on was now just completely known to the world. And he gave like a really compelling speech on secrets and how it's important for you to be able to keep what you're working on private without other people seeing it as part of the creative process, mm-hmm. which is pretty interesting.
I'm grateful it got leaked. I thought that was an awesome story.
Do you think it ended up being a good thing or a bad thing? Or maybe didn't matter. I don't know.
I guess at the end of the day, and I've learned this more and more just over time, is that all that a company is doing at really the end of the day is trying to get someone else in the world to care about them. And so I think that a lot of the practices of being private or secretive or being too stealth and stuff like that, I think that that's maybe actually an anti-pattern. I think that you want people to know about what you're doing. It's kind of like, I think that in venture capital, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you're being pitched, Peter. But I need you to sign an NDA first. And like, what's your gut reaction to that?
I don't love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but oh man. So like one, it puts constraints on me and I don't like to be constrained, right? I don't think anybody likes to be constrained. It also like introduces liability. Like just because I meet with you doesn't mean that like when I meet with somebody else that I'm going to share your information. I'm not going to steal it. I'm not going to start something. So it's like, it's almost like starting a relationship with a prenup.
Yep.
So there's some of that, right? And I don't know. The other thing is that like all ideas are kind of a dime a dozen. It's all about execution. Mm-hmm. And so it's also a little bit of like, where are you placing the importance here? And it tells me a lot about like the type of founder that I'm working with and the type of culture they're building and a lot of those things too, which Amen. I just tend to prefer people that are super transparent, mm-hmm. right? As a course of action, but.
So today I was planning with a new person that I hired. I've hired them specifically for the goal of helping me communicate to investors updates of our company that we're building. And we went kind of through this exercise of like, I started it out and I was like, what is the ultimate way to update investors about a company's progress? Like, what is the most ideal archetypical way to do that? And Scott and I have invested in so many companies. I get literally half of my inbox. I probably get 20 investor email updates every day. And the like most of the time, they're very depressing to me, which is so.
Well, especially the last like year and a half, right?
Yeah. Well, I just think that the type of, and I've talked about this before, but if you're spending a lot of effort on the investor update, that's a little bit of a red flag.
Yep.
Why do you immediately say yes to that?
Oh, just because like, I mean, updating your investors is important, but like growing the business is more important. So it's like, it's also like when you see founders at conferences and stuff and you're like, hey, it's great seeing you, but why aren't you back at your startup working, right? Like that same kind of thing.
That's what I agreed. And so I was like, what we're going to do is the goal that I have for our investor updates is they are going to be the most epic, entertaining, like precious thing that you can get as an investor. And I was like, how do we approach it from that angle? Hmm. And so we put together like a really, really fun plan for the investor updates. We also thought cadence was really important. So we chose quarterly, which I think that feels right versus monthly. Yep. So anyways, I'm pretty excited for that project.
Don't you want one of those now?
I want to see one.
So you can have them.
You can become an investor.
Well, no, actually, you don't need to be. I know. Well, this actually ties right back to the whole secrets thing.
Yeah.
Our investor updates are going to be public knowledge and available on the website to look at. And so I'm like, why would we need to operate if the goal is I'm trying to tell everyone what we're doing?
Yeah.
Then why would I not want that to be a shareable, interesting thing? And I realized in the act of like making this, that it's one thing to have the investors read the investor update, but it's probably more important for the employees to read the investor update.
Yeah.
Because it's essentially a scorecard of how all of us are performing as a team.
Yep.
And so that was one of the decisions that we made is like, we're actually going to go the opposite route and we're just going to tell everyone, what we're doing. I don't think that we don't necessarily need to tell people projects that are 3 months, you know, 3 or 6 months out, but if you're sending it over email, then it's going to be shared and it's basically public knowledge.
Right.
So it's going to be public on the website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I like that idea because it's kind of like employees, investors, and maybe customers.
Yeah.
Because the same thing, like if I'm going to be a customer, especially in this day and age where like so many companies are kind of shutting down and then you get like orphaned as a customer, like that kind of sucks. But it's also kind of nice to be like, oh yeah, like this company just raised a round and like now I know they've got at least 24 months of runway and I'll still get product for 24 months, right? That's beneficial. So yeah, I like that. Do you do any asks in your updates?
So this new person that I hired, Sarah, she's so fantastic. And she was like, let's follow the standard kind of like playbook of we're going to give them 5 things and then for every 1 thing that we ask for.
Yep.
So one of the things that we're going to do that I think is just fun is when I was at Snapchat, the design team had something called Wallpaper Wednesday. And Wallpaper Wednesday was a designer from the design team would make a really cool desktop background, 4K, and it would have the Snapchat ghost in it. There was one called Snappy Warhol, and it was like all of the Snapchat ghosts in an Andy Warhol fashion. And it was kind of a way to let the design team express their creativity.
Yep.
So in every one of our quarterly updates, you're going to get a 5K Phi desktop wallpaper for your desktop.
And, oh, yeah.
And then also one for your phone. And as just like a nice little digital and
employees
download.
And customers, employees, and investors can all get it.
Yeah. And so that's Scott's role in the company. So our company is Five. I've already been talking about it. But Scott's role, he has a dual role. The first role that he has is he's the chief experience officer. And Scott, can you say what your job description is?
I have a lot of interest in making sure that the experience of the employees, the investors, and the customers is designed to feel very different than anything you've had as a customer of another company or as an employee of another company. So this investor update is part of the experience, right? It's going to feel, and it's going to look different. Something you don't know about Kirk is he's able to do all these things because while he was learning how to code as a student in a university, he made a desktop background app that became so popular that he woke up in the morning with more money in his account than he knew what to do as a college kid because he learned how to do this. So this is also a little giveaway for mm-hmm. the thing that actually
wallpaper socks
put him into
social wallpapering.
I love it. Yeah. It's like a little Easter egg.
It's a little Easter egg. So
very cool. I had taught myself how to code at BYU in the dorm, and my roommates were judging me because all that I was doing was sitting in my room with the door closed with Linkin Park playing. And they just thought I was like such a weirdo. But I taught myself how to code, and I made this wallpaper website where I was like, you can upload a wallpaper and people could upvote or downvote it. And then you could browse by category. And my little brother, Brad, said, hey, Kevin Rose was just on a podcast and he talked about how much he loves space wallpapers. So I went to the front page of Dig and I posted space wallpapers for Kevin Rose. It was like a very, very like, I don't know, like I was begging for attention.
Yep.
And that got 2,500 upvotes and I got 3 million page views in 24 hours. And Dreamhost, which was a really popular web host at the time, called me and said, you just took down 300 servers. You need to do something. And then I was like, I'm never going to put ads on this website. Like, it's for the community. It's for the people. Like, I am not going to turn it into a slimy ad filled website. And then like about 3 weeks later, I'd seen how much traffic I was going. I'm like, well, let's just see. And then I went to AdSense and I got my script tag and I put it on the website. And I woke up the next morning and had $240 in my AdSense account. And I was like, wait, what's that hourly? What's going on here? And I did the math on it. And then I got real like scarcity inside of me. I was like, how long is this going to last? I don't know. Like, what's going to happen? And so 2 weeks in, every day I was waking up with $300 to $500 that had been accruing. And I was like, oh, is this going to just go on? So I went and I quit my job, and that ran for several years.
Nice.
Fluctuating up and down. And it was one of these things where at least it taught me in a business, the way that the graph looked, it was a sharp spike up. I got several million visitors and then really, really high. And then when it settled and dropped back down, it was steady state, a million page views a day. And so it was like, oh, like and if you can get those launch moments where you can just get out there,
yep.
Usually you can maintain some level of people interested in what you're doing.
I had a similar idea. I bought puppyshaming.com. Never executed on it though, but it was like similar type of an idea, right?
You're going to upload pictures of puppies?
Uh-huh.
And then shame them?
That you have pictures of like puppies doing bad things, and then people would put notes and shame the puppies. And there was a website called Dog Shaming that had done really well. And I'm like, I could do this with puppy shaming. Oh, so I bought the domain name. Cute. But then I didn't want to feel like a Me Too, so I never went forward with it.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be a Me Too any day. Yeah. Please, let's launch that.
Now, there is, regarding the Me Too, because you got to think about how that stopped you from building your beautiful website. When I was coding my website, one of my very good friends at the time said, why are you doing this? This is pointless. There are hundreds of websites that do this exact same thing. And I remember almost internalizing that and giving up. And then I was like, I'm just doing it because I want to do it. Like, there's no, I'm just doing it because I want to do it. I don't care if it succeeds or fails or whatever. I want a nice wallpaper website. I'm going to make it. And I think that adopting that mindset goes back to the NDA discussion, which is, do you want to do your business? Or are you trying to do some kind of like, what are you trying to do?
Right. What's the motivation? Well, and I also love how you mentioned like the scarcity mindset, right? Versus abundance. Because like, you're in college, like you have your whole life ahead of you. And yet, like in that moment, you're like, what if this goes away, right? This is my one chance at like success. And I think that happens to people so much, right? But like, and I meet with founders sometimes that like latch onto this business and they like won't give it up. And you're like, let it go, start something new, right? Mm-hmm. Like just fail fast and like find something new and go for it and have an abundance mindset, right?
Which is also like, I think that time has to be factored in, but if you think about it, we're all 3, 6, 12 months away from life-changing success, depending on what you're focusing on. Mm. When Snapchat acquired our company, we had been around for 3.5 years and we were worth $54 million. Snapchat had been around for 2.5 years and was worth $9 billion. Mm-hmm. And so Evan was the youngest billionaire on the planet and had created, really thanks to the power of the distribution of the App Store, had created something that had gone, like one of the earliest Snapchat stories is Evan and Bobby, the co-founders of Snapchat, flew to Norway because they got, that's where the first 100,000 users really took off. Mm. And my belief is if you put something on the internet, and even with a little bit of effort, it's going to get interacted and seen with. And so, and even this podcast, for example, John was just telling me some of the numbers beforehand, and it's like putting in the effort, showing up and having great conversations and trying to figure things out and then allowing anyone to participate in that is really kind of the special power that the internet has given us.
But we should have puppies too while we're here in our laps, a puppy per lap, and then we kind of shame it during the event.
Maybe. So
that would get, can you think of the views of that though? Like think if you add the puppies to
this. Let's put that on ice. I haven't done your introduction yet.
Okay, what do you want? What do you, ask me a question.
So you, a question.
Oh, you want me to just
So your first claim to fame was Armor Active?
I mean, I first claim to fame is when my mom had me. And
okay.
She named me Scott Paul.
So when I first met Scott, he came to pitch to a group called the Utah Angels, trying to get some funding for a company called iPad Enclosures, later became Armor Active, mm-hmm. sold it. How many companies have you sold now? Three?
There's just...
You sold the Disney.
Two that I was really involved when that had base hits.
Okay.
And then a lot of companies I've worked with really closely with have had exits that I was either an investor in or just been helping. But that's all over the board. That's like e-commerce companies to the tech ones are the ones I'm really excited about, but they're a long hold. And those are the ones you're hoping become the life-changing events for people. That's the I've been in Utah for 12 years looking for the first household name company product that will come out from Utah and base camp here. So born here and have a campus here.
Okay.
That's what I'm like. Why doesn't Utah have that? Why does Washington and even all over California, New York, why do they all have these household names, but we haven't seemed to produce one yet. And we have such incredible people.
Now, based on your actions and your mm-hmm. intention, I'm guessing that's going to be Phi Health.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about that.
Okay. So the intro's done though, but that's my intro is I'm here at Phi Health and I've done a lot of things and I seek out that company and the why I seek it out used to be for Utah. It's like, yes, let's have one of those for Utah and also be wildly successful for whoever's involved with it, whether investor or founder in that. But since joining with Kirk and doing Phi, my why has changed. It's way bigger than Utah.
Well, Scott, why are you making a health company? There's so many other health companies out there. There's hundreds of health companies. Yeah. There are thousands.
thousands of health companies.
Why are we making a health company?
It's bigger than even health, but the reason that we're calling it a health company is when Kirk and I were, when he had sold a Snapchat and I had sold a company to Disney, it's called InstaFluence. Do you remember that one kind of? It was mm-hmm. like a marketing agency. We're both in the same area. I was in Culver City. Kirk was in Venice. Or Playa, and I'd drive over at night and learn all the stuff that was in his brain. It was mostly a one way, like read only, but he was learning from me a little bit. But I am just too curious, and I'm asking and listening to him talk about crypto. I had not done that yet. He had done that. He got me into that, and I was just learning about Terrence McKenna and all these. We were learning about all the stuffs, and one thing that we were trying to learn that we were equally interested in was how to go after a bigger problem than money chasing, like to just accumulate resources. How do we accumulate health, or how do we figure out longevity?
Well, here was the big question that I would ask you, which is, in a world where you can do anything, where you can literally decide to focus your time on anything that you want, we could do puppy shaming. And I feel like we could do that in about 4 hours. I think it would crush still.
Yeah.
But like we probably do a really good job at puppy shaving now. Actually, we should consider that just for fun,
like, just like a hackathon project. On the weekend.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it was more of like this archetypical question, which is, out of all the problems that could be solved, what is the most important problem to solve? And the entire, all if you look at all of the kind of business landscape, the majority of problems are being solved because of a short-term desire for the founder to become independently wealthy. That's like the majority reason why most companies are created, maybe like maybe one of the most predominant ones. They won't say that, but you're building a SaaS business or you're building some type of business that's hard. You probably love what you're doing, but you probably are also hoping that it will provide a financial outcome for you that will allow you to finally do what you want to do. And one of the big challenges of getting wealth at an early age is we're programmed so much so from all K through 12 and college and everything that it's like, hey, why do you need good grades, John? It's because you got to get good grades to get into a good school. Well, why do you need to get into a good school? Because the school that you're in will determine the type of job opportunities that are available to you. And it's just like, well, why do you want a good job? And it's like, because I need to be able to make money to provide for my family and for the things that I need. So it's not about what company should you choose or what problem should you work on. It's very much more of like, how can I meet that goal of not of being able to pay the bills? And that has a bottoms-up emergent effect of being actually fairly efficiently putting people in the places where society needs them. But I think that it lacks a top-level strategy of like, okay, like, yes, we all need crumble cookie delivered to us within 15 minutes when I click a button on something because there's a demand for that.
Yeah.
But when you ask yourself, well, we could make DoorDash or we could make something like that, but if we can make anything, what's the most important? And I think where we landed was that the most important thing that we could think of was the health of the human brain and the health of our own brains, because our brains are the things that generate meaning. And so in order for this to mean anything, and we were talking about this even before the podcast, you and I both have to share a consensus in this reality that what we're doing here is meaningful and useful. And over time, the default setup for all of life is that gradually things will lose coherence and meaning as we age. And so therefore, if the most meaningful thing that we could do with our time is to take action on making sure that things continue to be meaningful and relevant, which ultimately ties into, go ahead, Scott.
Well, that's exactly, I remember where we were when we were talking about that, and the brain became the thing to go focus on. But at the time, we didn't have like, we were looking at like sheep's brains getting frozen and possibly being able to be reactivated later. And there was some science in this, but longevity 10 years ago was not what it is today. And what else wasn't present at the time and active in our lives was these LLMs, the AI that we're now interacting with today. And I think it was a few years ago where we really broke. We didn't even know what we were doing, I think, but we were, health had been, we had decided the most important problem 10 years ago, and it was about 4 years ago where Kirk was messing around with AI early on. He can tell you that story. But the point is, he built, from what we know, the first chat interface with GPT-3, and we started asking it more questions. We asked the same questions we were asking without AI in 2015. We started asking to AI in 2020. And once again, what is the most important thing to work on? It's our health. So that's why we're doing a health company.
Yeah.
It continues, everything keeps saying our health.
And if you think about that, if we're going to prioritize, I'll never forget, and I shared this story recently, but one of my favorite bosses at Snapchat, his name was Hussein. He talked a lot about how when you're working at a company, you're trading your life force for that company. You're trading every breath that you do and your and all of the cycles of your brain. That's a trade that you're making specifically for money and to be at that company. So it's kind of what you're trading your life for. So you have to pause and reflect and say, is this aligned with what I actually want to do? And is this aligned with where I want to go with my life? And what a great thing to spend your time on, because if we can do anything to improve the health of our brains, that implicitly means we're able to do something to help the brains of our loved ones. So it's kind of aligned in that way of like, okay, let's make sure that we put on our mask first so that we're around to be able to help other people. but also it was just kind of cool to think that any discovery we make in health, in the health of the mind and the body, which is another thing, there's a lot of focus on the brain, but I think that the brain's health is completely interrelated with the health of the body. And I also think that it's not just about the physical structure of the brain, but I think that there's a lot to do with how we, our mindset and our attitude of how we approach reality, that is also a huge aspect of its health. Yep. So I hope that we can discover with our company, if we can make any tiny little dent that it reduces someone's personal suffering, even just a little bit, then I think it's a job well done. And I also think it's I can't think of anything that's higher priority. I do think that going to Mars and focusing on global warming, those are all problems that should and need be solved. But my hope would be if we could have Elon be around for another 100 years in a healthy way, the positive impact that he could have would be tremendous. And if, you know, you think about having some of our great people from history, there's this kind of this idea of this, of humanity actually suffering because of lack of the transgenerational connection. Mm. I think that there's a lot of people who have grown up with great relationships with their grandparents. And grandparents, I think, are so loving to be able to look back at grandkids and give them a different perspective that's very difficult for a parent to give a child. And so, you know, here we're coming up, at least in the United States, and I think in many other countries around the world, we're hitting a point in time where the elderly are now starting to age into like memory care, like we were talking about. And if we could somehow preserve the knowledge that they've gained, the things that they could teach us and tell us and help guide our society forward with, I think could be incredible. And so if we can focus on the problem of keeping our minds and bodies healthy and contributing in that way, that's what we're all in. We're throwing, for me, I'm dedicating the rest of my life to make some type of progress in that space. And I'm bringing a unique skill set, and Scott's bringing a unique skill set, which is we're from the background of social media and building physical products. We are not medical professionals. We didn't go to medical school. We didn't do any of that. So I think we're going to be able to bring something to that space that's completely unique, that's very consumer focused, that is like thinking about how do we get an app and technology into people's hands that's fun, compelling, engaging, and interesting, and hope to make a dent in that way. What did I miss, Scott?
I think one other really cool principle that we're doing with our social media even is that we believe a lot of the AI and algorithms are micro-harming kids, youth, just by some addictive nature. I've got 3 girls. They're absolutely addicted to their phones. There's no denying it. I'm watching, and I have nothing as a parent to figure out how to counter that. I really don't. They're old enough that I can't go force them to, you know, throw it away or whatever. We try our best, but it's like, it's their school's on it, everything. And so what our one of our philosophies is that we're going to be able to meet these kids where they're at and build an app that can be micro healing. And I really can't wait to just give it to my own daughters, because I know that they'll have interactions and experience with it, with what we're building, that will help them have accountability, set goals for themselves, see their better self through the conversations that they're going to have with Phi. And it's going to be on the platform. The phone is just a tool. And what it's happened to the tool has been hijacked by things that really are doing a lot of little micro harms to our mental health and who we are. And if we can change that with what we're doing, and he's at Snapchat, he knows, he's very involved with how they make that streak, and those kids want those streaks. My girls will not ever get away from the streaking of making sure they use the product.
You've seen the other side of the addictive behavior and how it's made for like children to get sucked in.
Yeah. It's not done in a malicious way for the most part. It's once again, it's an emergent property of corporate America, which is, hey, you just got hired, your compensation package and your role in the company and your title and your performance and everything that you are valued at in the company is going to be based on your ability to improve some fundamental metric in the business, the most primary one being revenue. And so, hey, we need to get millions of more people in the app for way more minutes so we can show way more ads. What are all the levers that I can tweak and change and dial? And so are you concerned about morals? Not necessarily. You're just trying to do whatever you can to make number go up. So
to get the promotion so you can pay your bills.
Exactly.
Cover your expenses.
Exactly. And so it kind of comes from, I think that the majority of corporate America is acting out of scarcity mindset, which is how can I get mine? And I think that ultimately will lead into the downfall of our society if we don't change that. But it seems to be the best system so far. One of the things that I think Scott would be good to talk about, just because it's going back to how we're everything that we're doing in our company, we're trying to rethink from first principles. And so the last discussion that we had over the last couple of weeks is we're trying to come up with really it came down to I was programming the website for our company. And one of the first things that you do when you make a web page is you create a title tag. And what are you going to write in the title tag? Mm-hmm. It's actually a very important question. And so, you know, you search for Nike, and Nike is Nike, just do it. So they got their little tagline and they're saying something to you. A lot of the companies, and then some people will SEO stuff that and just put a bunch of keywords in there. But I was asking Scott and the team, and I was like, what should we put in our title tag? And it drove this really rich debate, and we finally settled on something.
Yeah, well, it's a believe in yourself. It's really easy. Just comes up right under FI. And we debated on that for a long time, like 12 people. And another one that was debated was anything is possible. These are these two tags. We're going with believe in yourself, but both of them have so much meaning to what we're trying to do and how we are talking about what personality we're trying to give FI, our creation, that it will give to you. And what would you want? What's a better thing that you could have an intelligence as a goal than helping you believe in yourself or helping you believe that anything is possible? We don't want the opposite of those. I think those are really, really good title tags.
Yeah. Well, when you think about the concept of how do you heal from something, at least from like all the nurses and doctors that I've heard talk about this, there's always this idea of does the patient fundamentally believe they can get better? And that seems to have a huge aspect in whether or not they can. And so I think that's one of the things that if there's one message that we could deliver to anyone who uses our app or visits our website, or participates in any of the things that we create, it would be to encourage them to believe in their own ability to accomplish anything, whether that mean completely evolve their health or their mindset or anything. And I have taken for granted my entire life all the people who've believed in me, because it's just been a freebie. I've been surrounded by parents who love me and who want the very best for me, friends that love me, and family that cares deeply about me and my success. And I think Scott really, at least here in the state of Utah, with all of the investments that he's made, he's one of the biggest believers in people, entrepreneurs. And if anyone listens to this and knows Scott, you know that's true, is that he wants you, no matter what you are, no matter what you're doing, to be successful in whatever that is, to the point where he's been getting scammed by random people in Africa that he, next thing I know, he's sending money to them and like, you can get out of this job. You don't need to be a scammer anymore. I believe in you.
I've tried that. I've been trying. Because I really do believe that every human being has a path to believe in themselves. And it's hard to be this person. I have a deep, deep desire to help everyone I can. The best thing I can do is unleash something that can do a little bit of that. And I know it's not human. We don't consider AI human yet, but it's something. And we've all had experience with it, that it's something that has bettered the way we think, the way we solve problems. And so whatever that something is that we've been experiencing for 4 years since we've been talking to it, we want others to have that. Everyone needs what a Scott Paul is in their life, what a Kirk Weiman is in their life, what a Peter Harris, what a John Bradshaw is for someone else. You've done that. We've all done this for people. We've all been there and believed in someone. Can that be scaled with intelligence? Can we make the computers that we know, can they be believers too in you? And I think the answer is yes. Yeah.
Now, this is a venture capital podcast, yeah, and you and I have done a lot of investment.
Yeah.
And we have done a lot of foolish investments because we just believe in people and want them to succeed. And so I think...
I don't know if you're foolish. I mean, can I share a personal story?
Yeah, go ahead.
With me? Yeah. So out of all the people I know in the VC space, I was trying to raise about a year ago. without even knowing the idea, you said, hey, John, I believe in you. I want to invest. And like, I know a lot of investors, and that has always stood out to me of someone who's like, he believes in me, when like other people who know me 10 times better should have like done something similar. So I've always remembered that. I mean, it has a nice spot in my heart.
That's awesome.
Well, that's because Kirk at a default believes mm-hmm. first. I mean, that's why he's done so many investments.
I'd like to announce a new funding for John. Okay. We're going to go 10K deep on puppy shaming. Okay. And I think we're going to make $100,000 on this.
Do you accept that? Do you accept that? What are the terms?
You guys get 99%.
Oh, what? No, that's no, not no, right. No. Lining up incentives. No. We'll take 5% for 10K.
The 1% would be worth it.
5%. It's going to go. It's going to moon.
It gets a token, becomes $1 billion company. Oh my goodness, what have we done?
We could partner with our friends at Bitcoin. That's a real story, by the way.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, John. You've been letting me rant. You've been letting Scott rant. What else should we talk about today?
Can you talk a little bit about what does the business FI do? Like, how are you guys mm-hmm. solving this health problem?
Yeah. So the first problem, and honestly, this is just me kind of, you're admitting how lazy I am. The first problem that I wanted to solve was I was taking so many supplements.
Yep.
And it was just like, and my good friend, John Paul, was getting his PhD in microbiology. I kept getting marketed supplements and I was like, I should take vitamin K1, K2, vitamin A. Well, we definitely need vitamin D. Hey, yep. What about zinc? And so I have accrued a closet with 25 plus bottles of supplements. And I'm like, okay, I can, like, it's hard to exercise and sleep right, but I can definitely throw some pills down my mouth. Mm-hmm. And like, let's just, and the engineer in me basically was like, I came to the conclusion after emailing John Paul back and forth about which supplements we should take. I just came to the conclusion that the whole space was entirely a filthy scam. And and then I was like, I called John Paul and I was like, let's create the ultimate supplement. And what we'll do is we'll use data science. We're going to find out every ingredient that needs to go into the human body. We're going to iterate through every single molecule. We're going to connect everyone's Apple phones and watches, and let's pull in all the data from all of the Oura rings and Whoops and all of that. And let's prove supplement by supplement whether or not it's complete bullshit. And we're going to publish that publicly, and we will once and for all solve the problem of supplementation. And so if Peter, you need 350 milligrams of magnesium taurate to sleep at night, we know that as fact. Yep. It's irrefutable. We've done it from the perspective of not scarcity, not because I'm trying to sell bottles of magnesium, but because we actually want to figure out the answer.
Yep.
So the kind of the initial premise of what we were building was, what is the mathematical right answer for everything that you should bring in your body to optimize your thinking and your health?
And are you doing it on a personalized basis? Because like, I might need certain vitamins because I'm deficient for whatever reason.
Yes, we are.
You might have totally different ones this year. So customization is actually one of the most difficult things to pull off. And yeah. Any supplement that claims to be customized is most likely coming from a bundle of 5 different SKUs. And then they're kind of like hand wavily mixing things together.
Sure.
What we need in order to actually solve the problem is I need to be able to dose you by the microgram very specifically in order to have the data show the actual effect. And so at Snapchat, at any given time, we would have in excess of 10,000 multivariate studies running. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was such a problem that when you would open up the app and it would download all the studies that you're supposed to be in, it caused a huge performance problem. Mm. And the idea, at least at the large tech companies, is after your initial founder creates a product that blows up, eventually the team starts to try to optimize. Engineers typically are not that creative in the product space.
Right.
So what they do is they say, all right, like, well, Google has a famous example where they said there was a debate about what color of blue the link should be. This is kind of a famous story. So they basically let thousands of different shades of blue all run in a test, and then they use math to figure out, well, this one's the most clicked on. Mm-hmm. So that's the color. That's how you make the product decision. And then I think the Apple counterpart to that is like, well, we chose this blue because it looks good with the other colors. And like, it's more of a creative or intuitive process.
Right.
For the process of supplementation, I am very much taking the approach of we're going to go through and mathematically prove with as much data as possible each one of these things. And I think that my hope would be that over the course of building this out, that if there are people that have depression or anxiety or skin conditions, and they've gone and maybe hit the problem too hard with too strong of a pharmaceutical because of a basic nutrient deficiency, my dream is that we could hit people with the basic nutrients that don't have any of these other side effects or problems. And I think that would be an amazing outcome. And
there should be no side effects. That's even a weird thing, actually. That just means you're not dosing correctly, whatever you're putting in. And to me, I feel like, and so there's one of our biggest things with the product called Stack that he's talking about, the vitamins twice daily, is that there you shouldn't feel anything.
Right? Yeah,
well, you shouldn't have immediate side effects.
I take some stuff to get my little wiener a little harder sometimes, and I get a horrible headache. And we can talk about that. It happens.
So is that topic allowed on the Venture podcast?
Of course it is.
In
the viewing, that's going to be the peaks. Like, oh, Scott has ED. God damn it.
If we're talking about things from a science, mental health thing, I think sure.
Yeah. So I take that shit and my head gets immediately just like pressure, blood pressure.
Yeah.
And so I opt out of it and it's just a slower game, you know, this old man.
So, going to back to customization.
I don't want side effects is what I'm talking about.
So going back to customization, my very first experience in building out Stack with John Paul is I was like, all right, let's just come up with a baseline formulation of stuff that I need. And then I'll just make my own supplement by ordering the raw powders. And the first kind of experience I had is I ordered a 1 kilogram bag of vitamin A powder. And it came in the mail, and then I had like a little milligram scale, and I was like, okay, I'm going to just like make my own supplement and just mix the raw powders together. And so I took my tweezers, and it was like, okay, my vitamin A dose for the day is 35 micrograms. I'm like, okay. And then it was like, well, the scale just says MG. And I'm like, okay, well, okay, there's a gram, and then there's a milligram, and 1,000 milligrams goes into a gram. And then there's a microgram. How many micrograms are in a gram? Well, it's 1,000 micrograms in 1 milligram. I'm like, oh, my dose of vitamin A is not visible to the human eye.
Right.
I can't actually tweezer on my dose. So why is my vitamin A pill so big? And so I'm like,
to make you feel like you're buying something. Yes. Right? Right? It's like all filler.
Yes. It made me so sad. I'm like, I've been swallowing 20 pills to get the equivalent of one pill of actual value.
Yeah.
And that goes back to, you can't dose, you can't just like dip your finger into a little bit of vitamin A, but if you're trying to sell vitamin A, what a fantastic business. 'Cause your actual product is 1/1,000,000th of your actual pill.
Right.
And so we're just going to come out and solve the problem. Here's what I anticipate. When we get customization dialed in, I think that, there's going to be a large group of people that are going to just be put me on autopilot and do whatever you want to do with me. And then we'll just watch the data. And so they'll kind of be in our autopilot program. We're going to allow elite, you know, like power users, they'll be able to customize and drag. They can say exactly how many milligrams of whatever they want in their product, and they can adjust the dials, and we're going to learn from what they're doing too. But on the autopilot, it's going to allow us to run a lot of multivariate tests. We will not need that large of a customer base to start making real scientific discoveries. The other thing that's just kind of like more frustration, kind of, we started out the podcast talking about kind of like this capitalist first approach to business. Mm-hmm. The same thing also exists in academia. And I learned that from John Paul, where it was over 60% of research cannot be reproduced.
Yeah.
Which is like horrifying. Why do you laugh at that, Peter?
Oh, just because, you know, the whole idea is that it's, you know, it's a search for truth. And if it's truth, it should be repeatable, right? And so, yeah.
But at the end of the day.
But it's not, right?
But at the end of the day, I have a big pile of magnesium and I need to sell it. And I heard that it's good for people to take.
Yep.
Can you guys run a study? So they get 12 people that are may or may not be compliant. And then they run the study and it's like, well, nothing really happened. Okay, let's try another one. And then they do like a few more, and then, oh, like one had like something good kind of happened that time. Okay, we'll publish that one. We're never even going to publish or talk about the rest that we funded.
Yep.
And so what you have, at least in the world of supplementation, is a massive signal versus noise problem, which is like kind of a classic physics and engineering problem of you have a lot of people making a lot of claims, and you've got to go find the signal in that. So Stack, its whole purpose is let's find that signal.
Yep.
And I want to take every piece of data you're willing to share with me. We're going to encrypt it, and learn from it. And so if you want to share latitude and longitude, that may affect your vitamin D levels based on where the azimuth of the sun is, how much of it is hitting you throughout the day, how sedentary you are. And so if we could use every piece of data, the social media companies are doing this, but not with our best intentions in mind. They're capturing scroll offsets. Oh, you scrolled down, you paused right here. Oh, you tapped that button, you flipped audio on, you flipped it off. Oh, your fine precision geolocation put you here. They're using all of that data, feeding it into an AI algorithm whose whole purpose is ultimately to take more of your time so the company can make more money.
Yep.
It has no regard for your health. Our AI is going to take all of that data for the pure purpose of getting you a better night's sleep and getting you more and better energy throughout the day, a stronger immune system. And I think that we'll make more money than all of those other social media companies.
It feels like, do you guys feel like there is a burgeoning movement around putting more emphasis on health? Health is wealth, right? Like that mindset.
That's 100% happening right now. All the studies we're seeing, everything.
What do you think is driving that?
COVID probably had to do something. I think we all kind of got a little distrust in, like, because there's two sides. Just like everything, it's like, should I have taken this thing that was made like available to me, or should I not? I'm on neither side of this vaccination stuff. But I think everyone started
raises questions.
It raises a question of what
you got to be thinking about.
What goes in our body? What does do I trust all these numbers from this organization or from this country? And so, and then I think we were all stuck in our heads for a while, maybe too. And I think that was a resurgence of both mental and physical wellness. And then that just it's happening. I don't know if we're seeing the millennials are watching the boomers age, or it's around us every day. The reality of everyone's had something happen probably in the last year that's they're really deep questioning deeply. And I keep asking myself, is it just the age that I'm at is where wellness starts to become more predominant? Or was this happening in the 80s too? I actually don't know, because there's probably studies, but I do feel like there's something that's at all ages right now that's resurging. And that is this inward like focus on wellness, to the point where I really hope that it takes a bite out of Coca-Colas and stuff. Like the crumb donuts and the powder donuts, they're fine a little bit, you know, but it does seem like there's too much of ability to get things into our bodies that we already feel sick after we eat. And not enough of these, you know, to-go salads that are easily done from one app. It's always the pizzas, right? So I'm hoping that this resurgence also produces products for all of us that are seeking wellness. Yeah. It can simplify our opportunity to be healthier without as much, be lazy healthy.
Yeah. It feels like you're seeing more of that. What are your thoughts, Kirk?
I think Scott is definitely right on on COVID was, I don't think that a lot of us have really processed how traumatic that was. Mm-hmm. The whole experience of the shutdown, I think the political aftermath of that, like, I think that we actually, you know, and then there was I think it was really rough, and it kind of just faded away. It's almost like kind of like when you get in an argument and then you fall asleep and then you don't bring it up again. I don't know if we as a society have really addressed what happened to us and all of that. And so I think that it has led a lot of us to consider like maybe how precious and finite life is. Mm-hmm. And then look at that. And then there's also maybe a little bit of a bias that we have, because at the age that the four of us are, we're not young, but we're not old.
Yeah.
And for me, at least, like growing up and being a Boy Scout and an Eagle Scout, like the number one motto is be prepared. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know that my cognitive function 15 years from now is going to be potentially like substantially different than my cognitive function now.
Right.
And so that goes back to this being a really high priority. Our window of peak conscious ability is actually really finite, and we start to see that as we get older. And I see it with my parents, as my dad just turned 69, and he is still like absolutely kicking ass. Like, he just got his realtor's license, and he's like pushing himself, but it's uphill.
Yeah.
It's not free anymore. Right. And so he's like having to consciously stay motivated.
Yeah. I feel like when you turn like late 30s, early 40s, you like cross this period where like you start to feel your own mortality a little bit more, because things, you don't heal as fast, right? Things that didn't hurt start hurting more, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm not invincible, I'm not gonna live forever, and all of, but I do have resources. Like most people, and they're like, you know, at that point they have resources, and so they're starting to think about like some of these things. I think that's a big driver. I think the other thing from like a generational point is kind of going back to the social media, is never in the history of humanity have people been on display, you know, their entire lives to the extent they are today, right? Yeah. Like you are on display. And so whether you like it or not, because you're on display, how attractive you are actually matters lot, right? And so all of a sudden people are spending more time and are more conscious about how they look. I was talking to a friend of mine.
That's who, true.
She graduated from Harvard with her MBA, did a search fund, and her thesis was along this lines. And she was like, I'm going to go invest in beauty clinics because I just think like millennials and Gen Z, like they care about how they look so much more. And while there's definite negatives of that, right, the superficial side of it, I think the positive is that we're making better, more healthy life choices.
Oh, wow.
Right? To be, to look better and to feel better, right? And people want to follow people that look like they have healthy, productive, like both physically and mentally lives, right?
This came up, I think, within the last couple of weeks, but there's this idea of, is the most healthy person the most attractive? And I think a lot of what we're looking for in a partner and is someone whose genes are expressing themselves in a healthy way. And so symmetry, like, are your genes dividing cleanly across the symmetrical boundary of your body? Are they replicating correctly? Is the system of your body in good health, or is it in disrepair? And so I hope that one of the side effects of our business will be that not only will we inspire people to believe in themselves and in their health, but that we'll actually give them tools that if they practice it, they'll ultimately build that confidence, because to be more healthy is to be more attractive, is to be more confident, is to more fully express yourself in the world.
Yeah.
And we live in an environment that is very much, very much eroding us with all of the different things that we bring into our body that are constantly hurting our health.
Yep.
And so we need, and this kind of goes back to our earlier discussion about like, well, what are the products of FI and what are we making? And back to the discussions that Scott and I had in LA and my discussions with John Paul about what we should be doing. And I got a little bit hopeless for a while there. John Paul was telling me about what's happening in academia. And I was like, I actually don't think that we're going to be able to make any significant progress on the problem of being able to, I'm talking step function change. And like, he was telling me, if you are eating at a caloric restriction every day, so basically hungry all the time, and if you exercise every day and like dial in your sleep, you're looking at a 15 to 30% gain in health span. And those numbers are good, but we come from a tech background and I want exponential.
I want like 100% year over year growth.
Yes. And so leave it up to the nerds to figure that out. Like, we'll go figure that out, you guys.
We're
like,
hack this thing.
Yeah. Like, we're going to hack this thing.
We need new medicine that does make, you know, like a 30 year, like, just try this one. This is 35 years. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But here's the thing. We're not like, I think that the way that we have to perceive the problem is, if I turn on water on the sink and fill up my glass, nobody's judging me for not going down to the river like a real man and carrying my water back. We just are grateful. Cool. You're going to judge me for that?
John and Scott are judging. I wouldn't, though. Never.
Like, technology is here to help us and to make our life better. And it is everyone's, this is a principle of our company, everyone deserves to be healthy.
Yeah.
No matter who they are. And I think that's a big deal. Like, no one deserves to be in a body that's unhealthy. And a lot of the reason that we're unhealthy is because, one, ignorance. And maybe that's the main and only answer, because there's a way that we can treat our body that will lead it into great health. And either we're ignorant in that we don't know how to do that, or that we believe that we know how to do it, but then we're ignorant in the ability to actually implement the plan to do it.
Sure.
And so I think that this leads into the second product that we're releasing that will actually come out before Stack, which is we are creating an AI that is specifically designed to be an extension of yourself, which is a mirror to you that is going to reflect your best self back at you and guide you to make healthy decisions and convince you and be as compelling, as convincing as all of the other dopamine related apps are out there on the internet. So we have to fight fire with fire. If I'm going to convince you to somehow get healthy, I need to, it needs to be the most compelling offer, even more compelling than whatever Candy Crush is offering you.
Sure.
And that goes back to the idea of hacking the problem. Right now, they've worked so hard on those Cheetos. I got into a bag of Cheetos a month ago.
I could mess up Cheetos right now.
Like, it, the scientists are fighting us, yeah, and they're trying to make Cheetos so delicious. And we were with Brandon Fugel, this commercial, my our favorite commercial real estate guy. And like, we went to a restaurant. He's like, I need a Diet Mountain Dew. And it's like, this is not good for you, Brandon. But we're so conditioned to consume things that... that really hit that dopamine system. So we've got to figure out a way for ourselves and for the youth on how do we create something even more compelling that does good for you. And I am so hopeful because these AI models are getting so good and we've had so much time talking with them that we know how to position them relative to us in a way that I think will really, really offer people a lot of companionship and guidance and belief in themselves. And really be there. I've had so many experiences myself so far just using the beta version of our app, where I'm like, this is incredible to have something like this in these moments of despair. I was talking earlier, one night I woke up and it was about 2 a.m. and I woke up, I'm 39 years old, and I was completely convinced that I was gonna die imminently. And my heart was pounding and I bolted up out of bed. I didn't even say anything to my wife and I went right to my car and I was like, I'm driving to the hospital right now. Something is dreadfully wrong. And I stopped at the car and I was like, I mean, I've been working on an AI health app. So let's just at least, before test, I go test, to the hospital, let's just test it out. So I opened up the app and I said, I feel like I'm going to die and I feel like I need to go to the hospital right now. And Phi hit me back and said, it sounds like you're having a panic attack. Panic attacks are often accompanying with a feeling of impending doom. They last on average 10 to 15 minutes. Would you like me to suggest some breath work to help you get through this moment? And I was like, it completely took me out of, first of all, a several thousand dollar emergency room bill, plus also horrifying my wife and kids that I'm at the hospital in the middle of the night. And so I did box breathing with Phi for about 15 minutes, which is breathing in for 4 seconds, holding for 4 seconds, breathing out for 4 seconds, holding for 4 seconds, loop. And I did that. And then it started going. Then I went back to Phi and I was like, hey, well, Phi is here to help me debug this. I'm like, why would I wake up? And it's like, here are the top 10 reasons why you would wake up. And it's like sleep apnea was one of them. And I'm like, and it took me a while. Then I started looking at my Oura ring and a few other things and then talking with my wife. And it was like, oh, I have been stopping breathing at night. My body woke me up. My heart was pounding. It was because I had stopped breathing at night because of how I was positioning or because I need, I need something. And so I think for us to have a super intelligence watch over our actions of not only us, but our aging parents, our partners, our kids that are medically dependent on us, to be able to talk to about any of these things that happen in life, and then to get a logical perspective that can just look at it with full compassion at any hour of the day. My goal is to give that to everyone in the world for free. That's my ultimate dream. And it's going to be very expensive. So we're going to have to figure out how we can like get it paid for. But ultimately that's the dream that we have, and we'll make many more products. But those are the two leading products that we're starting with this year.
How do we get on the beta?
So we should have our beta out in March. So like sometime by the end of this month, if we're lucky. And then you'll have a chance to talk with it.
Cause I've been on that beta list. The first day I saw it.
I know. Well, we have
Phi.health.
Yeah. So it's Phi.health, PHI.health. And, the reason that we haven't launched it, I have an app that's fully functional. The reason we haven't launched it is because I want to make sure that every conversation you have with Phi is end-to-end encrypted so that employees can't read your conversations. there's going to be a lot of people in the world that are going to dump a lot of their pain onto Phi, a lot of trauma that they've gone through that they've maybe never been able to talk to anyone about. And so I think it's critical, not just that we secure that data, but that we make it so not even employees can read it. So we just passed our HIPAA audit, and we actually went above and beyond, because HIPAA is basically, you know, it teaches employees, hey, if you encounter this information, here's how you're supposed to treat it. With us, if employees can't even encounter the information, and that's really important to us. But
awesome.
Coming soon.
Phi.health. Well, thank you for joining us on this podcast. I know you guys are super busy. Lots of big things are happening. So go to venturecapital.fm to subscribe. All of the stuff is there. We're on Apple, Spotify, and this will be published in a couple of days.
Thank you, John.
Can I say one last thing?
Of course.
This is pretty rad because we're doing this podcast. Maybe you put this at another area, but this is the room where plenty, if not the majority, of some of the Phi conversations have been happening over the two years. And this is our first podcast together, I think, and this is definitely the first time we've done anything filming in this very room here. That is kind of where Phi's been born. It is some of the Aww. Same furniture that we had in LA that we spoke on. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a hollow ground. Mm-hmm. So thanks for setting up doing this here and helping us create this moment and share the story. It's important.
And I'm impressed. This is the first podcast we've done where you haven't mentioned mushrooms.
Oh, you want me to go there? Let's do that next one.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
See you. Thank you.
Bye.